all this sort of stuff flying about the office, and I know there's times where you're probably thinking, what the hell are they talking about?
For real.
They're talking about RPM or HEPA, pneumatic, about floor lifters or air contaminants, all that sort of stuff. Are we talking about carpet cleaning or are we talking about carpet vacuuming? I'm going to say it, it's not for everybody. Some people, it's quite an isolated job. I'm not for one second trying to make a comparison. Technical cleaning and heart surgery. That's not what I'm saying. Our topic is specialist equipment, materials, understanding risks, understanding environments.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I say for me, I didn't realize until I started working here how much different equipment you have and for different types of environments. As you just said, we're going to get into all that. We're going to get a little bit deeper technical. Let's start
in layman's terms, technical as well.
Yeah, you just talk to me, and I think the majority of our listeners are going to be like that. There are going to be a few people that might pull you up on people that are your friends in the industry, so they might kind of
there's going to be some sort of more granular information. But if we're talking to the masses and sort of understanding what the parameters are working in particular environments, then yeah, we're going to touch base on quite a few of those sort of objectives.
Right. So we've got HEPA, we've got pneumatic, we've got these all names that most of
you hear flying about the office, right? You hear all this sort of stuff flying about the office, and I know there's times where you're probably thinking, what the hell are they talking about?
For real.
So this will be like an edge on the court. Let's just treat this as a conversation between me and you. And when you hear certain things going around in the office and you want to know what us talking about, if you hear us talking about RPM or HEPA or pneumatic, or you want to hear about floor lifters or air contaminants, all that sort of stuff, treat this as an opportunity for you to say, Courtney, what the hell are you not talking about?
Well, you forgot non-conductive.
Again, you might have your own list, so I'm cool. Like
ambient contamination.
Just look at this as an opportunity for you to pick my brains and say, what the hell is going on?
All right. So just tell us, what is the difference between all these equipment? I'm sure people have seen cleaners with these big industrial machines. Just take us through some of the main machines.
Okay, so if you think about cleaning, right? Cleaning is a service which is essentially designed to save time. Yeah. So you'll find that there's going to be equipment which is efficient, reduces time. It becomes more of a economic positioning. So if you want to go back in times, before the vacuum was even created, they're going to be using sweepers and stuff like that, right? So then the vacuum was created, and then you could start to vacuum spaces, which was more efficient. It was quicker. It was better performance, and things evolve over time. So you'll find that in the cleaning industry, it's all about sort of staying up to date, what's efficient, what's sustainable, what gives you the better performance. And you'll often hear us talking about various different products, various different manufacturers. We use some manufacturers for some bits. We use some manufacturers for different bits. We have our own preferences. Other cleaning companies have their own preferences on what they like to use. So there is a variations, massive industry for cleaning and supplies for contractors like myself, because there is a massive, massive demand for staying up to date with the latest products and materials.
I'm used to, we've got the Dyson and we've got the Henrys and stuff. Most people have one of those at home, or just a regular. In fact, Hoover is a brand name, isn't it?
Another thing, do you know what? This comes up quite a lot, right? Because to the mere mortal outside of the cleaning industry, their word for Hoover actually means vacuum, but actually Hoover was a manufacturer for vacuum. So anyone who says, can you check out the Hoover, they actually mean the vacuum. But go on.
Yeah, no.
That was just a fun fact to throw in.
No, that's for the non-technical. That's something, a bit of learning. I was aware of that actually, but we still fall into the same.
Okay.
What's the basis for commercial cleaning? I know we're going to talk about data center cleaning. That's your specialization. But for carpet cleaning, I've seen some of you. Just what is the machine you would use for that? And what is...
So you're talking about like a commercial...
Commercial carpet cleaning.
Like massive office space, carpets need to be cleaned.
Yeah. What's the difference between that and just using a Dyson? Why would you...
So firstly, let's stem it back a little bit. Are we talking about carpet cleaning or are we talking about carpet vacuuming? Because there's a difference.
Right, we're both. This is why we're here. So I've already learned something. There is a difference. Okay.
Okay, so you've got your sort of basic method of vacuuming. Yeah, you could be using.
So picture that.
You referenced Henry. Henry is a manufacturer. You also find that a lot of Henry's are the same design is used by Pneumatic. So they are manufacturers, just like Hoover is a manufacturer, right? And you get variations of vacuums as well. You have a tub Hoover, which is your, like you said, your Henry. It's like a, you'll see a vacuum, you unclip the top, and then there's a bag inside. Right. And then you've got upright Hoovers, which is your old school traditional push it along, and the machine is actually built in the wand or the lance, what you're pushing along with. So you've got upright Hoovers, which has a cylinder at the head of the vacuum, which is actually in contact with the floor, or you've got the tub Hoovers where the suction actually comes through the pole, through the head, through the pole, and into the tub. So you'll have a couple of variations like that. And then that's your sort of traditional vacuuming, vacuuming the carpet and stuff like that. Now, if you're talking about sort of carpet cleaning, deep cleaning, there's a couple.
For me, they were just one and the same. But
yeah, I mean, I kind of get what you're saying.
No, but they're obviously but not. There's two,
Again, without trying to get too granular, there is deep cleaning, which essentially is like shampooing your carpets. And then you've got vacuuming, which is your traditional maintenance cleaning of your carpets.
Got it. 100%. Actually, just a side note, we often talk about business. Do you know anything about James Dyson and the business story behind the cyclone?
Not really. I mean, I know he kind of works on a more of a domestic kind of level. I don't know if he works commercially. I haven't seen any of his stuff commercially, but I know he's quite famous for his adverts. I think he's got a good face for the brand as well, hasn't he? So he likes to... He likes to do a lot of self-branding as opposed to kind of
he's sort of like a Richard
and stuff.
Richard Branson,
like Richard Branson
type character. Yeah, but there's a whole story and book on how he innovated it. And
the
competition he was against. He had something like 5,000 iterations to arrive at that.
Well, you're teaching me something now because
it's a whole thing. It's worth you looking into that.
You've been
in that field. You know,
I like stories like that. Yeah,
yeah. You would find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I'll check him out.
All right, so we've got that.
Big up Dyson, by the way.
Give us some more equipment. I see one of your guys on a tutorial. He was pushing it very slowly and lots of buttons on there to press. And he said you can't do it fast. It was on a kind of a tiled surface.
Wait, are you off of carpets now?
All right, is there more on carpets?
So we gave you the two methods of maintaining your carpets,
finished carpets,
and deep cleaning your carpets.
Right.
I gave you the methods of your sort of general maintenance, which would be your sort of vacuum. I mean, you've got two variations of vacuums. You've got your tub Hoover, you've got your tub vacuum, and you've got your upright cylinder vacuums.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to a more of a deep, comprehensive clean of your carpets, which usually is done depending on your footfall or how often you want your carpets done, just say once or twice a year, you'll have a couple variations with that as well. So you'll have bonnet cleaning, which is used with a sort of floor buffer design, and you'll have wet extraction, which is essentially pushing a hot solution into your carpet pile and extracting it out simultaneously to extract the dirt from your carpets, and that they're your most two well-renowned variations of carpet cleaning.
Wow. So, Courtney, we're done with carpets. I'm sure there's more, but considering...
Yeah, I don't want to bore you too much.
No. Also for the time, but no, I'm finding it fascinating, to be honest. So give us a feel for some of the other types of equipment you use for the different services. Back to the carpets. Mm. What are those machines? What are the models? What do you actually use?
What I personally use within the business? We like to use ProChem. Big up ProChem, by the way. ProChem they've got variations. We spend so much money with ProChem. So they will provide wet extraction machines, which we often use. Right. Wet extraction is layering or pushing in a solution into the carpet pile and extracting that simultaneously. And then you can use ProChem sort of floor buffers, or I think the correct word is rotary machine. I think is the correct word, but in the industry we'll say sort of buffers. And you, again, you can do carpet cleaning with both methods, and ProChem will provide you with both methods, or both equipments for both methods, shall I say. And they've got a lot more on there as well, but they're the two Yeah.
I've done these videos. I help edit the videos here. We had the pneumatic and the HEPA, and they're just where do they fit into your tool set.
So we're talking about sort of in our critical areas.
I'll come back to that. I want to come back to just explain that there is a distinction between cleaning for data centers and commercial cleaning. What is the difference? We might as well get into that now.
So I mean, from a commercial cleaning perspective, you need to be working to an ISO class 9, which is generally cleaning at a commercial level, which you'd find sort of domestically. You probably find it commercially sort of in frequently used places. But when you're working in data centers, you need to be working towards an ISO class 8, in some areas a class 7, but industry standards, best practice is a class 8 and below. And that's when it becomes technical. That's when you start to look at the details, the equipment you're using, the fibers that you're using, you know, the properties of the equipment that you're bringing in, you know, what are you doing to reduce the risk of contamination in these spaces, that it becomes a completely different cleaning process.
You can go to college or university for this stuff. How did you learn all this stuff? Just on the job?
Conversations.
Yeah.
I've always mentioned this before in my post, right, is I am the biggest student of conversations. I could sit down and talk to somebody for hours and hours and hours, subject to you obviously being interested. But if I'm interested in what you are about or what you're doing, I just love conversation. Of course, you pick up a lot on the job. You know, it's earning and learning or something like that. You know what I mean? But practice is a huge part in the learning process, isn't it? But again, we're talking years and years and years of going over the same things, looking at the details, working out how you can be better, working out how you can be more efficient, working out how you can be more sustainable. Can you do it more effectively? What's your performance like? Can you shave the time? Can you save resources? Can you increase the time? Can you increase the resources? What's the client looking for? You know, these are all principles that you need to be working on. And again, that sort of repetition over and over and over again is kind of brings me to where we are now.
So I'm just jumping back and forth. I'm actually genuinely just come back to ISO. Just give me an example. How does ISO standards in cleaning, how is it applied? I understand ISO. Well, just tell us, for those that don't, what is an ISO standard, and how, you mentioned you've got these different levels, 7, 8, and so what?
So it's an industry, it's a recognized industry standard. There is variations of ISO's accreditations, but if we're talking about the frameworks of cleaning, you need to make sure that you're working towards a industry best practice. And for the sake of people who are interested in obtaining the service, it's a great way of you explaining that that is what we are working towards to ensure that you are receiving a service at the best industry standard.
Right. And you work at the ISO 8. Is that the highest? I don't know. It's
actually a bit strange, because you would think that the higher the number goes, the more meticulous the clean is. It's actually backwards. It's actually the lower the number is the more meticulous. But for data centers and critical environments, and you know that we also work in pharmaceutical manufacturing as well, which is even tighter on the guidelines of industry standards, which is a class 7. So yeah, for data centers, a class 8 in critical areas, shall I say, is a class 8. And pharmaceutical manufacturing is a maximum of class 7.
So give us an example of what you can and can't do, the expectations of a class 8.
Versus a class 9. Class 8 to a class 9, because a class 9 would essentially just be like your generic standardized cleaning. Maybe. The reasons of the classes is to represent the hygiene of that space. So if we're going from a class 9 to a class 8, the parameters of that now becomes air quality, it now becomes, what are you doing to mitigate sort of contamination or dust control in that environment? You want to make sure that you have got particular guidelines in place. You want to make sure that the air is being tested, you know, because anyone can say that we're clean into that standard, but if they haven't actually delivered a method statement on how they're going to do it, then how do you even know it's been done to that standard? And then you need to be looking at sort of air testing equipment.
So I'm assuming you do all that.
Essentially, what you need to do is you need to be taking samples of the air.
So you do this? You do all this?
Of course, you have to. You have to, especially in these critical environments. You have to be taking samples of the air, depending on the size of the critical environment that you're working in. Will depend on how many samples you need to take. So you can't just take a sample of one area. You know, if you're working at X amount of square meters, then you need to take X amount of samples to ensure that you've got a
coverage.
No, so you've got a average.
Average, sorry.
An average score, sorry about that. Yeah, so you got an average score of what your air sampling is like. Yeah. And then you've got to look at them, like the equipment and stuff you're bringing in. You touched on HEPA. You know, HEPA is a particular filtration systems and vacuums that is designed to use in critical environments. And I mean, even down to sort of allergies and pollen, pollen, that sort of thing can pick up on. And these particular vacuums are more, they're at a higher quality than what you would find in your sort of commercial vacuums. These particular vacuums are designed to be working in these spaces, so they can actually then to pick up on small contaminations and particles.
So is that the one we had at the show? That was a HEPA, that was the one with the two brushes at the CBRE show. Was that a HEPA?
Two brushes. No. That was a different piece of equipment altogether. That wasn't HEPA. No.
Oh. What was that?
That was a battery operated floor scrubber dryer.
Right. Wow.
Floor scrubber dryer.
Yeah.
That was.
No, that's amazing.
Which, depending on the environment, shouldn't be in a critical environment due to water usage. Well, I mean, you'll find that, okay, again, I don't want to go too granular, but your traditional data centers, if you've got a subfloor and you've got an air plenum floor, which you've got a lot of sensitive equipment underneath the air plenum floor, you want to reduce the risk of liquid being inside that data hall. So something what you saw at that CBRE event, we wouldn't be using if there was a raised floor, if we were doing a clean and a raised floor. But we have used that in sort of concrete floors and stuff like that, where that risk isn't apparent.
I'm learning a lot
again,
today.
Sorry, I don't want to get. Do you know what I've been told? Explain things as if you were speaking to an 11-year-old. I'm not suggesting that you've got a brain.
No. 11-year-old. Just treat me as an 11-year-old.
Don't get too granular.
I love the depth. I'm keeping just about kind of understanding. We're going to end on a topic. I'm going to just tell you what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about imposter syndrome at the end, just because you were a bit weary of talking about this subject. It's not feeling, you know, but anyone listening. And
no, do you know what? It's not that I don't feel comfortable about talking about the subject. It's that you know, if you speak to a chef, right, and he cooks the most beautiful meal, and then you ask him, what ingredients have you put in that? Sometimes he doesn't always, he can't remember the measurements. He only is able to deliver the meal, the service, the product as he's doing it. But if you actually sat him down in the room and said, okay, how much turmeric did you actually use in that? Did you weigh it? Where did you get your turmeric from? Where was it manufactured? He might just be like, oh, I don't know, I just sprinkle it for half a second, for example. So it's comfortable about talking about what we do. It's just when we actually talk to a refined level, measurements, standards, stuff like that, sometimes it becomes second nature. I only do it when I only really recognize it when I'm actually doing it, because I'm not actually doing it right now. It's hard to remember everything, shall I say. I don't want to ill-advise you. And I know this is a topic that you've wanted to talk about for a little while, because I know you hear all these abbreviations and all these sort of labels of phono and acronyms and all that sort of stuff. And I know it's a bit confusing for you. So I'm happy to assist on this one.
I've learned a lot between ISO and air contamination, all these different terms. You never thought, your operatives, how do they learn to use equipment? It sounds all very complicated. Do they need to go to training? Is there training on it? How do you...
Yeah, we've actually developed our own training, especially for working in data centers. Yeah, so what you'll find is that there isn't actually a practical training facility or training
really, you know, there's no like school for. There's no like yeah, school yeah, yeah. of school
not,
of
I mean I know there's a lot
using
of stuff,
commercial equipment
yeah there's a lot of stuff that is kind of being developed at the moment, but we yeah. actually go into depth. There isn't one. There
wow.
there is some sort of like online courses and stuff
could
like
a,
that
a but business opportunity there for somebody so, somebody could set one up
yeah possibly. I mean, I'm in conversation with a particular gentleman and he's keen on doing something like that. So there's a conversation I'm going to be having. But what my point was is that there isn't actually a recognized industry practical cleaning for data centers. So we've actually designed our own one.
Wow.
And I've got to explain something as well. The environment of working in a live data center is completely different than what you could read off of a computer. You know, even just down to the noise levels, you need to make sure that you've got air protection in your ears because of noise levels. If it's a hot day as well and you've got the fans and you've got the crack units, air conditioning, for the sake of this conversation, air conditioning, which is used to optimize the temperature in a room. If that's working incredibly hard, those fans are going really, really hard. It's loud. You can't even hear yourself think. You can't learn that from a computer. You know, you got to be able to, it's hard for you to simulate these type of conditions is what I'm trying to say. So it's a completely different space. I mean, we're effectively cleaning, but it's a completely different space. It can be very hot. It can be very uncomfortable. Right. It can be very loud. You need to make sure that you're taking the right breaks. You need to be making sure that, you know, in some spaces, the air is different. You need to be coming out and, you know, making sure you've got respite. Completely different environment.
You know, I've seen you do, we're here at the offices here. I've seen you do interviews here. When do, are they expected to know when you're hiring someone?
It's a niche industry. So no.
Right.
And if when we are working in critical environments, I'm very particular about the operatives that are going in there.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very particular, because we are talking about very sensitive equipment. We're talking about human error. We want to reduce the risk of human error. So what we tend to do is upskill within the business, within the company. Because we primarily work in data centers anyway, a lot of the operatives are very intrigued to see our mobile division or our critical division going into these spaces. And they often ask questions like, why are you using that equipment in that space? Why can we only do it on weekends? Why are we working after six to be in there? And we kind of look at the ones that are interested and we say, look, if you really are interested, we can look to kind of uplift your skill set and then take you away from the sort of commercial element and start bringing you into the critical element. So because the industry is so niche, you'll be waiting a long time for you to find the right individual who's got that critical cleaning experience. Right. Not to say it doesn't happen.
Mm.
It does happen, it's a smaller percentage.
Yeah. So really what you look for is more than the skill, which you're not going to have, but more their mindset and their ability to work in this kind of environment, yeah.
We're looking for common sense. We're looking for common sense. We're looking for awareness. We're looking for them being practical. We're looking at them understanding, having an awareness understanding of the space that they're in.
Yeah.
We're looking for detail.
Mm.
Like you could be working in a, you could be working in a cab, or sorry, a cabinet or a rack for X amount of time, and one person could think that that's clean, but we could go in there and we're like, well, that doesn't meet our standards. So we're talking meticulous cleaning here. We're looking for someone who's got a good eye for detail here, who can work under pressure, who can work with variations of different things, external elements, which could distract you. I've already, already touched on the noise levels can be a huge part to play in when it comes to cleaning. We already talk about the heat and the temperature. We already talk about some of the positionings, even some of the positionings that you've got to get into, and your hands and your knees, and you have to hold that position for quite a long period of time just to make sure that you're getting in those integral parts within a cab or a rack. That in itself can be quite taxing on the body. So, you know, we look at variations of what would make a good data center cleaner.
No, it's just amazing. Do these guys I love it. This is, it's so good, Courtney. These guys, do they get paid more than the average commercial cleaner?
Or look, we're going to talk about numbers here. But
Is it worth more? Well, I mean, you don't have to give me figures, but you know.
Yes, they are paid more.
They're paid more.
They are paid significantly more
right.
than your commercial cleaning options.
Interesting.
But then again, it really does depend on what that person's looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different environment. And it's not for everyone. Do you know what? I'm going to say it. It's not for everybody. Some people, it's quite an isolated job. If you're working inside a comms room, or you're working inside a data hall, and you know that you're not going to be able to interact with anybody really, apart from your team, you know, you tend to be working quite isolated.
Yeah.
It takes you about sort of 10 or 15 minutes, depending on what data center you're in, for you to actually get to that critical environment. There's a lot of access doors, and there's a lot of inductions, and there's a lot of, you know, awareness there's a lot of things which is completely outside of the commercial element. It's not for everybody, but yes, you're compensated is what I'm saying. You are compensated due to the elements and the environment that you're working in, and also the risk and the sensitivity, you know.
It just sounds like as you say, it's not for everybody, but you know me, I love that, the isolation and just being able to do my own thing, that would suit me. But as I say, it's not for everybody.
If you look at it from a bit more of a relatable perception or a perspective, a nurse or general doctor works with the people and they interact with the people, and it's quite fast paced and at different places. And then you're talking to a surgeon who's very isolated, very detailed. I'm not for one second trying to make a comparison technical cleaning and heart surgery. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that there is different principles and there's different disciplines involved when you're a nurse versus a surgeon. And when you're doing critical cleaning, it does get quite surgical in comparison to working commercially.
I've got to ask you about what's that? I've seen the guys, is it Carl and Ray? I've seen them with this backpack thing on it. It just looks like something.
Backpack HEPA like, vacuums.
Is that what it is? It's amazing. If you can't picture it, it's actually a backpack, a machine on their back.
So you know
Ghostbuster machine.
Ghostbuster, everyone says that, right? You know I'm big on details, yeah? Like, I look at every detail and I look at what does this mean, right? So I think to myself, for example, if you've got a ladder and you don't have a vacuum which is suitable for that ladder, what does that mean? What impact does that have on the operative? What impact does that have on the client? What impact does that have on health and safety? What impact does that have on essentially providing the best service possible? So we'll use that backpack as a perfect example, right? If you are on some steps and you are working at a higher level than at ground level, and you need the vacuum for you to get into some of these intricate places, if you don't have the right vacuum, it's going to be very difficult for you to, one, do the job appropriately, and two, do it safely. So now we're talking resources, and now we're talking about sustainability, and now we're talking about things being cost effective, because you're going to have to be using the vacuum for longer than what you should be using it for, because it's at ground level. Then you're going to be looking at, is it safe? You know, you want to reduce the amount of risk there is in working in confined spaces. So if you've got like a vacuum hose, or you've got cabling or anything like that, you want to be reducing that risk. And then you want to be looking at being efficient, you know. So if you've got a backpack, which essentially is on your back, and you feel stable and you feel safe and you're able to work at a higher speed, you're able to get more meticulous with your cleaning, and you're able to essentially provide a better overall service delivery. These are the small details that you need to be looking at.
I love it, Courtney. I'm brilliant. I mean, I was taking a mic, but I really, it goes even deeper, honestly.
We'll do another podcast about how deep do I go. Like, wow, detail in everything I do is so important. If I can save 3% here, 5% there, 2% there, and I can communicate that to the client and say, look, we are able to make a positive impact by X amount of percent. That's the difference between being good and being excellent.
It's fascinating. Really good. We touched on it there, just a little bit on health and safety. I don't think we talked about it. Just tell us about the health and safety. Aspects in this, is, you know, people just don't think about it. And I've quite often seen you pick up on, you know, wires across the room and things like that. People standing on objects trying to reach the
ceiling. The amount of health and safety stuff that I've done, I might as well be a health and safety consultant. Do you know what? Even down to little things. You know when we was at that that event, that CBRE event?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you were healthy. No, that was horrendous.
No, but what I'm saying is, you know, like even down to some of the branding or the A banners and stuff they're using, and people have pictures up of their operative doing stuff, not necessarily cleaning, it could be electricians, whatever. And I'm looking at the details, and I'm looking at the photos, and I'm looking at that bit of cabling running underneath that ladder, or I'm looking at nobody footing the bottom of that ladder, and they're using that to promote their business. And I think to myself, you need someone to look at these details, because if that was me, that wouldn't be nowhere near like my brand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you want to, like, unfortunately, health and safety is there because something bad has happened. And it could be something which is really unlikely to happen, but it's happened. And we need to be, everybody who works in the industry, of manual labor industry, needs to be aware of possibilities of things going wrong. And God forbid, if something was to go wrong and you haven't acted accordingly, then that is a very, very heavy guilt trip for you to hold. So health and safety is a pain. And yeah, in this country, it's probably a little bit more stringent than it is in other companies, but it's there for a reason. And effectively, you all want to go home to our families, don't we? We all want to go home to our families, and we all want about to... we all want about to earn a salary, and we want about to do it safely. So health and safety is there. So yeah, you'll hear me talk about working at heights. You'll hear me talk about, has that person had their training at working at heights? Are they competent? When was the last time that they've done, their health and safety modules? Who's footing the bottom of that ladder? How many people are on site? How many people are going to be, overseeing the job? You know, this is all because of sort of health and safety. All it takes is someone to trip over a lead.
Yeah.
And you could have two or three floor tiles out of a data hall. Someone trips over a lead and falls down that hole. You've got a big problem. So these are the sort of small things that you need to consider, which could be a massive problem. So health and safety is a big thing. And it's really important that, you know, that prospects, buyers, data center managers, even customers who are customers of data center spaces, where they rent spaces, you really need to make sure that you're working with a company who takes these type of things seriously. Yes, it is a bit of a pain in the ass, but you need to make sure that you're working with a company that understands the parameters of health and safety and takes it seriously, because it plays a big part. It plays a big part on your costs. It plays a big part on the quality. If health and safety wasn't implemented, chances are the cost of the job's going to be reduced significantly. Yep. But then it's really important that the customer or the prospect or the buyer, whoever's going to be looking to purchase your services, is working with a company who does take that seriously. And you can't really put a price on removing the risk. Yep. You know, if something bad's happened, there's a reason why there's health and safety been put in place for that. And yeah, they might want to go with the cheapest quotation or the cheapest bid or something like that. But then you should really be kind of doing your own investigation in why is that so cheap? What have they put in place for X, Y, and Z, you know? X, Y, and Z, sorry. If you think to yourself that, okay, if you're working on a set of ladders or set of steps and somebody needs to foot the bottom of that steps, that takes labor. And you've now doubled up on labor. Right. And if you're looking at a supervisor who's overseeing a clean and they were cable management, for example, you need to make sure that the cables are running in the safest direction possible. You want to make sure that there isn't too much slack on the cables. So when someone trips over, you know, you want to be making sure that you've got working in progress signs up. All of these things here requires attention, requires detail. Yeah, and that affects your costs. So if small details like that is the difference, it could be the difference between 20% in two proposals. So if you've got two proposals and there's a difference of sort of 10-20%, you'd probably want to have a look in why, and you'd like to know what are they doing in regards to this, their health and safety at all levels.
No, love it, Courtney. I think we can keep talking. I think it's good to see you come alive on this topic. So I hope.
I feel like it was very critical bias. I mean, again, we specialize in designing cleaning programs for data centers. So whether it's external, we haven't touched on compound and generator yards. Which again plays a massive importance into the cleaning and hygiene of data centers. Again, we'll probably have to say that for another episode. We haven't spoke about the commercial elements and why it's important about having various commercial elements, client-facing elements, to make sure that you've entrusted your data being saved with the right company. You know, there's bits of that what we haven't spoken about. There's bits of how do we manage contamination from point of entry, you know? So we're not just talking about inside the data hall, we're talking about the data corridors, we're talking about the commercial space, we're talking about the entrance foyer, we're talking about kitchen breakout space, we're talking about restrooms. Like, what are you doing to control the risk of contamination from getting into the data hall? Again, different episode, probably refining it too much, but there's many elements. No. I could talk forever about this.
I love it. I love the fact that you know it. The details, we're talking about the equipment and you know, the fact that you take health and safety seriously is, you know, I know this is the place, the company I would want, and anyone listening.
I take health and safety seriously.
I wouldn't expect anything else from you. That's what we want from you.
I take really, really seriously as well. Sorry to interject. Health and well-being. You see my teams that are out there who represent C4. Their health and well-being, to me personally, plays a big part in how I deliver my service. I don't want to overwork my staff or put them at risk just because I'm under pressure from a client or the margin is too small. My main concern, first and foremost, is my teams. My teams are more important to me than my client. And I know that sounds a little bit risky saying that, but I'm being serious. If I don't have a healthy team who wants to provide a service to the level of what my criteria is, then I've got a problem. And I can't produce my service to my clients if I don't have a healthy, fit and able team.
It's a great philosophy to have. And ultimately, they're the ones that will look after you. Look after them, they'll look after your clients. So it's actually a good thing.
And the thing is, I do a lot in personally recognizing them. Yeah, you see me in my office and you hear me on the phone and you see me doing emails or whatever, and it just seems like I don't have much visibility of what's going on. Trust me, I know what's going on. I know who ain't feeling good. I know who's had to have had to take the week off because they've got family staying. I know who's traveling back to their homeland, not homeland, but you know what I mean, like their place of residence from back home. I know who's studying, got an exams. I know who's won achievements. I know everything. I know a little bit too much, to be honest.
Gotta say thanks, Courtney, for sharing all that those details. I know you're rearing to go. You could go another 2 hours.
I'm flowing, honestly.
But question on. So just give us two points. So what? How can people get hold of you? Is always the thing. I think this is going to appeal mostly to technical people that are interested and data center people. So if they want to reach out or ask you further questions or quiz you on anything, how do they get hold of
Chambers.
You?
Courtney.chambers@c4cleaning.co.uk.
Yeah,
that is good. My email address.
And your
website.
Yeah.
www.c4cleaning.co.uk. You can catch me on LinkedIn. Courtney.chambers. I get a lot of like messages and stuff, and I do my best to try and get back to everybody. Most of the time, it's people trying to sell me something, like whatever. But
you might even get that after you're trying to sell you like gear.
I do my best to get back to everybody. I often give more time than I should because I do believe I require time from other people. So, you know, it's not always one hand that washes the other. So reach out to me if you want to have a chat.
Just on a personal level, when you go home, you speak to your wife. I hope you don't talk industry and vacuums contamination. What do you talk about with your wife at home?
We talk about films. We talk about box sets. We talk about my children.
Normal things.
Normal stuff. You gotta have.
No, I was gonna say
you can't take your work home with you.
No, I was gonna say she must like really love you if she.
You can't take your work home with you because
she has to listen to this at home.
You need to have a separation from work. Yeah.
Yeah. Courtney, thanks again. Learned a lot today.
Until next time. Wrap C4.